All right, g'day guys. Welcome to another episode of the Newey Tech People podcast. I've got Mark and Alec from Strategic Group with us. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Dan. Great to be here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having us.
No worries. Well, to get started, introductions. What do Strategic Group do?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. So I'm the Director of Operations and co-CEO at Strategic Group. Strategic Group is a managed service provider that helps other small to medium businesses with their technology needs. So we do outsourced IT support, IT project management, cloud computing, private and public cloud, security services, and cloud voice, telecommunications, that type of thing. So we try and offer a one-stop shop for our customers to take the hassle out of IT and really help them manage end-to-end.
Yeah, awesome. Alec?
I'm the infrastructure team lead at Strategic Group. So I look after a lot of the behind the scenes of our private cloud stack. So we run a fairly large on-prem stack that helps our clients deliver a VDI-like solution.
Awesome. It's good to have you guys. Strategic Group, been around the Newcastle region for quite some time now.
A long time, yeah.
Little bit of a tidbit for the listeners. I actually started my career in IT at Strategic Group, so way back in the day. So,
yeah, absolutely. I've heard stories about how you started at Strategic Group and you were relentless in knocking on the door saying, you know, you wanted to work at Strategic and you were...
Yes, back
to oblige.
Back in the days of it was Seek, not much LinkedIn, and I think a lot of handing paper resumes.
Yeah. When MSN was king.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. So yes, kicked the door down and forced my paper resume onto a few desks at Strategic Group, and eventually got a call back.
But and yes, we're so glad that happened. You know
how the world has changed. Yeah, can't do that anymore.
Yeah, it's coming full circle. So it's good to have you guys. I guess give people a bit of a context. Strategic Group, where did it come from? Tell us a bit about it. And
where did we start?
Yeah,
my father started the business in 1989. It started out as doing sort of SCADA monitoring systems for power stations, and eventually the power stations, one of the clients that Dad had at the time said, you know, you guys must know something about IT. Can you look after our servers and take on the support and management of it? And that's kind of where, you know, it evolved from, you know, way back when. And the business has really grown from there. We've grown pretty organically, but we've done much the same thing, and that's to help businesses with their technology needs and offer a fully managed solution so that they don't have to think about it too hard. And so now, you know, we have technologies or services, I should say, that are a bit more sophisticated and keeping up with the technologies that are, you know, in today's age.
Yep.
You know, we still do our outsourced IT support for our customers. We still do IT project management, but we're doing a lot more public cloud services. So like Microsoft 365 and helping customers with that. We've got our own fully owned private cloud solution.
Yep.
So we've got lots of customers using that. We've moved into security consulting and services as well, and telecommunications and cloud voice.
Yep.
As well. And I guess while, you know, the technology's changed, the objective's the same, and that is to be a one-stop shop for our customers and really help them in their technology needs.
Yeah, awesome. Fantastic. And Alec, your role in the business?
I'm a jack of all trades, master of none, as they say. But I'm formerly our infrastructure team lead. So I help look after our private cloud stack, but also act as a bit of a top-level kind of tech escalation for some of the guys if they need a sounding board or a rubber duck, as we like to call it, come and have a bit of a chit-chat and just help with some of that really nitty-gritty tech stuff behind the scenes to help power that private cloud and a lot of the cloud-based solutions that we have.
Yeah, awesome. So very infrastructure-based role.
Mm.
And how did you land in that? How did you come to that place in your career?
I fell into it entirely by accident. So I started back into Ireland. I've fluked my entire career, let's be honest with you.
He's our guru. He's our main man. So he hasn't fluked anything.
I started following the contractor that helped my high school out around basically like a bad smell.
Yeah.
And then when I finished high school, they kind of said, do you want to come and work for us? And I went, yeah, sure. That sounds fun. Let's start there and see where we go. And then I fell into a role with a company called Net Registry back before they had multiple acquisitions and grew in through the web hosting space.
Yeah.
So I became quite familiar with hosted infrastructure and assets and how they can help shape, you know, web-based technologies and hosted technologies. And then I did that for 9 years. And then eventually I actually got a call from the strategic group guys saying, we like the look of what you've done. Would you like to come and have a chat and see if we might be able to help us?
Yeah, nice.
So I fluked it.
Yeah, there you go. Pernicious at the beginning is a bit of a theme here on people getting started in careers with pernaciously following people around and eventually getting a job.
Well, I think I'll just on that, good people attract good people, right? And you yep. want, you know, you want to bring good people into your business, and good people like Alec and the others, people that have got in the business, know other good people. So it's yep. just, you know, that's a really easy way to find talent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. How has that motto affected your retention?
How's it affected retention? We have a really good retention rate. I mean, a lot of our guys have been with us for a long, long time. We had our project manager retire last year, and he'd been with us for 30 plus years. We've got guys that have been 10, 15 years. So that stability really helps us be able to deliver the products and services that we do, but also, you know, it helps attract other good people as well, because you know, they've got their network and their people in their network that we can leverage on.
Yeah, nice.
It's weird. It's weird coming in as an outsider to the strategic business too, because it is such a unique culture, and it's made up of those people who are really detailed. They care a lot about why they're working for us and start to bring all of that together. And the first couple of weeks can be an absolute shock, because everyone is just so happy to help. They're so detailed in how they do it. And it's almost like a cult. It's weird to say that, but you hear that a lot, because people are like,
you've drunk the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, it's good Kool-Aid, I have to say. It's just building a community. And that does help the retention, because everyone does start to form these really strong bonds with each other. And I've made some really good friends working for Strategic as well, that we catch up with outside of work. Mm. And you know, even when people like yourself move on, we still keep these close relationships with them and pick up effectively where we left off.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's something that we work really hard on. It doesn't happen by accident, but it also happens. It's not just something that Chris and I do. It's something that everyone's got to be a part of. And I think that word community is, you know, sticks out in my mind. That's what we're trying to create is a community based on shared values and, you know, a place where people can come and feel safe to, you know, be vulnerable, to have fun and find those connections with people.
Yep. Really build that sense of community and in the team.
For sure. Yep. And then that's gotten harder post-COVID, I think, you know, as people have moved out of an office environment and working more remote. I think people they're more isolated at home, and you know, they don't have the opportunity for those everyday interactions that you did in an office.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
you think about going into an office and meeting people down the hallway, or going out for lunch with someone, or even, you know, after a meeting, you know, just spending 5 minutes and catching up.
The water cooler chats.
You know, there's less opportunity now post COVID, I think, because we're in that remote workplace. And that's, you know, part of our challenge is to try and find those opportunities and bring people together. But it can't be forced.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've played around with things and things haven't worked. But, you know, I think things like Zoom drinks and things like that are really challenging for people if you're trying to force people together.
Yeah.
It can have the total opposite effect.
Yeah. Right?
So, yeah, it's about finding those opportunities and giving people those opportunities to come together and interact and connect.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. You guys have gone from being a single location business to being a multi-location business, and some of that's been through acquisition and other things, but how's the transition gone from managing a single location workforce to managing a distributed workforce, and once again maintaining that sense of, you know, family and community and team?
Yeah.
How's that been?
Yeah, look, it's a great question, and it's challenging. It's something we're always thinking about. It's something that we're really conscious of, is to make sure that the staff that are remote feel part of the family, feel part of the community still.
Yeah.
You know, how do we do that? It's about thinking the person, and I think just caring for the person.
Yeah.
You know, and what are their individual needs in the situation that they're in?
Yeah.
Trying to think of that person and care for that person, not just as a strategic group employee, but holistically, who are they? Where are they from? What are their values? Who's at home? You know, what do they like doing on the weekend?
Yep.
And connecting with them in that way, in that more holistic way.
Yep.
But it's also about, you know, providing sort of tailored support and coaching for those people to keep them engaged and to keep them interested and on the career path that they want to be in. So, yeah.
I think that happens a lot through the everyday stuff that we do through work as well. We are very careful with our culture to make sure that it doesn't become the head office in Newcastle delegating things out. Mm. So when we work with projects, for example, we make sure that we get the best person for the role effectively. Yep. You know, one of our guys over in Perth, for example, he'll have a great level of detail with a specific piece of software. I mean, okay, let's get you onto this project because they're using that piece of software, whether that's a resource or running the project or whatever. So we make sure, and those cross-functional teams that come together for these projects that build up and then get broken down at the project completion, help build those relationships. Yep. And we start to get a lot of the communication going backwards and forwards as sounding boards and things like that to include them. But it's also when we have want to change policy, for example, or change templates. Being an IT company, it's important to us that we keep standards, especially being an MSP. We don't want to get to a place where every client's got a completely different setup and it gets hard to manage. So when we do start to go, okay, let's standardize this, we bring everyone's views into the fold and give everyone a chance to have an opportunity and a say in that and be completely transparent. I think through those interactions that happen in the everyday, we still manage to keep that, even though the workforce is spread across, you know, five different states.
Yeah.
I guess that's where the transition's been. It's been, okay, what do we need to support the customer? What do we need to support our employees, you know, regardless of where they are?
Yep.
So it's just... it's shifting that mindset from, well, everyone's in the office to no, well, everyone's anywhere at any time.
Yep.
But it, you know, that shouldn't matter. It should be bringing people together, as Alec mentioned, to do whatever needs to be done.
Yep.
You know, together.
Yeah. That's good. And from a customer point of view, customers are where, all over Australia?
Yeah. Abroad. Yeah. So, all over Australia, I mean, most states.
Yep.
In Australia, and we've got hands and feet on the ground to support them.
Yep.
in those areas. So, you know, Queensland, Victoria, as Alec mentioned, Chris over in Perth, Adelaide recently. Yep. So, yeah, all over the place, which has its own challenges as well. Yeah, you've got staff all over Australia, but also clients all over Australia too.
Yep. I guess it keeps that bit of continuity when there's staff everywhere, clients everywhere, everyone's kind of servicing everyone.
Yeah.
A little bit of that.
I keep pushing our sales team, not that they're particularly pushy, but I've got a big map of Australia with all of our clients on it, monitoring everything. I'm waiting for them to fill in the missing gaps. I want to fill it in and have one in every state.
Get some.
We're working on it.
Get some dots up there in the Pilbara.
Yeah.
Who gets to draw that short straw?
Not sure what the internet's like out there.
No, that's good. From a technical point of view, I guess how do you keep techie people engaged? There's obviously a pretty high turnover, high churn in the tech industry. It's probably, I guess, depending on the industry, I think some software industry, software sectors, it's like 0.9 of a year is the general churn rate on employees. I didn't check the data on infrastructure before we started this, but what your churn rate's like years.
Yeah.
Average would be multiple years.
I don't know what the average would be, but it's...
Yeah, yeah. How do you keep texting?
It's about 5 years.
5 years.
Stats I stole.
Which is pretty considerable. How do you keep those tech staff engaged for that long and still give career progression opportunities?
I think it comes down to nothing to do with the tech. It comes down to like what we were talking about before, and bringing people into a community they feel safe and valued, but also giving them some purpose around helping other people. And we're big in our community partnerships and the things we do for our community partners like Ronald McDonald House and Run Dip G and those guys. And that really helps, you know, and I guess helping them feel like they're part of something bigger than just the tech. And not that it's just the tech, like it's fun stuff. Right? And everyone that comes to work is passionate about technology.
Yep.
But I think that is the key element to keeping people. It's about, you know, that community, but also about that bigger purpose.
Yeah, sure.
I don't know, from a tech point of view and keeping people engaged with technology, I mean, we have, you know, individual coaching and training plans for individuals about keeping them up to date with the latest skills and, you know, Microsoft certification or other certifications that we do. But I think it's about, you know, when we've got new products and services, just getting people involved as well, trying to get them involved in that and helping build those things. We come together pretty well, I think, as a group when we've got a problem to solve.
Yep.
You know, we're a very flat structure, so we really encourage anyone in the business to come and contribute. If there's a problem that the business needs to solve, then let's get everyone involved. You know, two heads are better than one and 45 heads are better than two type thing. So
Sometimes.
got to manage that a little bit. But, you know, I think that's the concept that anyone can come and contribute to almost anything.
Yep.
From a tech perspective specifically, as a company, we're very culture first, making sure people fit our values, and that helps to build that community. But obviously, there's still an itch there that our techs need to scratch.
Yep.
And it can be hard because it is such a wide world. You know, you look at IT 20 years ago, it was a very narrow field of view almost. You didn't have a lot of room to move. Nowadays, you've got so many different areas. You know, you've got to pick a track and kind of, do you want to specialize in something or do you want to stay being a generalist? I think being an MSP helps as well because we are asking our guys to be generalists. So they get to jump between a lot of different things, and that kind of help keeps them engaged. Gives them the opportunity to build their skills in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
And even though the world's kind of becoming smaller through things like M365 and Google Workspace, those kinds of tools where it's becoming everything as a service, there's still this element under the surface that a lot of people are forgetting and leaving exposed in a way through cybersecurity, where they are forgetting those fundamentals.
Yeah.
Everything's kind of just become, it's just as a service. So our guy specifically gets to bounce around a lot between those different areas, between software as a service, on-prem, private cloud, and then the fundamentals behind the scenes.
Yep.
So they get to jump around, and we encourage sharing that knowledge through what we call knowledge shares. So every 2 weeks we'll have one that comes together. Someone will pick something they've been working on that's interesting, spend 30 minutes just presenting it to the team and help build those skills. And you kind of hear people afterwards, they're like, oh, that's pretty cool, I might go and have a bit more of a look at that. Yeah. Or the client that I'm looking after, they're not quite ready to do that yet, but I'm going to go away and start talking to them about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's kind of jumping between a lot of those different areas to help scratch that itch.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, cool. Oh, that's awesome. It's certainly, it bucks the trend generally across the industry. So it's cool to get a bit of a insight into, you know, what makes that work for you guys. And that's a highlight when I think about the kind of companies that people like to stick around at. Yeah, yeah, that's cool. In terms of some of those advancements, you mentioned security and things like that and some, you know, higher tech areas that you've like to let guys have a bit of a foray into, keep interested, engaged, and scratch that itch, as you said. That you've had a few areas that you've done that with recently. Mentioned earlier, ISO certification or check is audit is coming up. So obviously, tech's not something that plays second fiddle You guys are on the front foot and kind of doing things to best practice. How do you find developing those skills, or where do you find those skills? Like, is it homegrown, you know, growth into being at the forefront of the technology? Have you had to hire specialists in to kind of deliver that, you know, best in class tech? Yeah, how do you get there with, like, your cybersecurity is obviously a major thing for you guys. You're delivering private cloud services to, you know, national companies. That's a big thing. It's a hot topic at the moment. You know, how do you guys stay on the front foot with that stuff and make sure that you're delivering best practice and looking after clients?
I think in terms of, you know, how we address it through talent, it's a combination of whether we need a specialist role, and we don't have it at the moment, we'll likely recruit, or the alternative is that we upskill.
Yeah, right?
And I think particularly in the world of cybersecurity or just security in general is such a hot topic right now. You know, it's almost every day that you're picking up the phone and seeing in the news feeds that there's been another breach or there's been a security incident. So talking about security specifically, I think it's everyone's role.
Yep.
You know, it's not just a specific cyber engineer or consultant's role to be mindful and be conscious of those security elements, because it's all of our roles. And we've had, as you mentioned, we've gone through our ISO certification internally. We've got our external assessors coming in next week, so we're preparing for that again. But that's been a real journey for us, and you know, we started that journey because we wanted to be the best and best in class, and we didn't necessarily know what it was going to entail initially. But we've had to learn and had to adapt, and that hasn't been through external sources. That's been through trial and error, a lot of it, and through upskilling internally. So I think that's really made us a better company. I think about how our internal processes have changed, you know, not just the technology, but the people and the processes as well. You think about hiring a new staff member, that goes through a whole different security process now.
Yeah.
You think about going out there and evaluating an external supplier, that's a whole different, you know, process now. So we're, you know, it's more than just that technology space. Security touches everything. It's almost like a consciousness for the organization. So yeah, I think we've had to, we've been on a learning curve and a journey with our internal security, and that's going to continue. And that's most of, I'm just trying to think, but no, all the team have had to, you know, upskill. You know, we haven't got external, hired externally for that role. We have produced a couple of security services this year for customers. One being aligned to the Essential 8 model, which is, you know, the Australian government kind of said all businesses should be aligned to Essential 8. So we've created a service around that for our customers. And again, that's more, we're focusing on the technology and the management of that and what's in place. So again, we haven't hired externally for that. That's been a conscious effort from our guys to upskill in those areas. The other service that we've just launched is a managed information security service, which is more of a consulting service. Helping customers assess their overall security risk and again, moving outside just the technology space, but the people, the process, and providing that governance and strategy around general security. In that case, we have hired externally, and we've brought in an information security consultant to help us deliver that service. So, yeah, it's a real combination of upskilling, you know, internally, but also hiring externally where we need it.
I think we're fortunate as well, where a lot of the clients that we tend to work with, we build a lot of strong relationships with that will last a very long time. Some of our clients have been with us almost as long as the business has been around as well. And when we think about those kinds of clients and the relationships we build, they're very stable track kind of clients. They're not rapidly evolving. They're not bleeding edge kinds of businesses. They want stability, they want structure, they want that kind of consistency that yep. we can offer them. And that's part of where we come into the picture to deliver that. And as Mark kind of said, it's about taking that holistic view. And we hear from a lot of the customers that we work with, our clients, they don't want to know about the tech. They trust us to take care of that tech piece of it.
Mm.
But where this world is starting to evolve is that there's so many different tech options now.
Yep.
You're kind of death by options. It's almost becoming a little snake oily with some of the solutions that are being pushed out there to create this false sense of security.
Yep.
And as Mark kind of said, it's about creating that holistic view of security. Everyone's involved, and that's where that information security piece comes into it, because businesses get lulled into this false sense of security of, oh, I've just bought a thing off the shelf so I can tick all the boxes. It's not the case. When you start looking at how you're actually storing your information, how you're dealing with your employees, how you're securing your business premises, and that's where it starts to become that holistic view. And when you kind of walk into a boardroom and talk to these clients about it, you kind of go, well, have you considered this? And they go, crap, no, I haven't.
Yeah.
And then that starts the wheels turning. Mm. And that's where that real change starts to come into it. And you build that kind of culture of security inside each of the businesses that helps contribute to it.
Mm.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, interesting point, Alec, you raise about, you know, customers not caring so much about the technology. I mean, that's our job, really. And we care.
Yep.
You know, we care about the partners that we have. But I think that's 100% right, that customers, they're looking to do their work.
Yep.
And they're looking for us to ensure that they can do their work, you know, better, faster, automate some of it, you know, make sure that they're able to achieve their objectives, but they're not worried about what the technology is. You know, does it matter if it's HP or Dell?
Yeah.
You know, it probably doesn't. It matters to us. So we've got to, you know, really find the solutions out there. And Alec mentioned that that's getting harder for us.
Yeah, yeah.
But we've got to take the feature set that the customers are asking us for and really find the technology solution that helps them to deliver that and helps us deliver that to the customer. That's because another important point is around, you know, us being able to support whatever technology solution that we select. So, you know, a lot of the majority of our partnerships, our technology partnerships, are the bigger enterprises of town, like your VMware, your Dell, your Microsoft, because we know that they've typically got the best product, they've got the most R&D, the biggest R&D budget, they've got the biggest support teams and development teams. So we know that, you know, when we put a solution in place, that we're going to be able to support it really well as well.
Yeah, and have that support there. So. It's I guess the industry as a whole has gone through a massive journey over the past 15 years of like cloud becoming a thing and then public cloud becoming the norm. Mm. I noticed recently that Basecamp announced that they're leaving the cloud and going back to managing bare metal. Mm. As a pure SaaS business, that's proposing that. They've always been a little bit rogue in their approach to business, Basecamp and the guys from 37 Signals. But I think they're in their announcement, they sort of flagged a few sort of financial things that sort of fit their business size. But I think it's a really interesting, some interesting points that get raised there, because from a business point of view, over the last probably 5-7 years, we've seen a lot of infrastructure engineers sort of move or not have much to do when it comes to bare metal in those businesses, because there's not a lot of bare metal in those businesses anymore. It's all Google or AWS or Azure. And you guys have maintained that level of infrastructure, managing that bare metal infrastructure. Do you have any comment on where things are going? What do you think of that side of things? Do you think that'll be harder and harder to find people to manage the bare metal? And, you know,
it's already getting harder and harder to find them. So we recently decided to add a head to my team that looks after the infrastructure stack that we've got on-prem. And admittedly, we tried to recruit through COVID, but it still took us 2 years to find someone. And that's hard to find someone that has those skills now that are becoming more niche, harder to find. And you're getting only the bigger end of town, like your banks and your unis and stuff that have got those skills that are still running it. But it's an interesting point that you touched on with people starting to leave public cloud. People are getting sicker, at least that's what I'm hearing about bill shock especially, where they're like, oh, I projected it was going to be this much, but it ended up being this much. And it's just absolutely annoying the heck out of them that there's so much elasticity in it, which is good for one end of town, horrible for another. But even in Australia, you look wider, there's so many new data centers popping up. There's a new one that this month alone, I think there's one that's opened in Sydney, Perth and Melbourne.
Yeah.
They've all opened brand new data centers and someone's filling them.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's so many of those businesses now that are coming back out of the cloud. But I think it's getting easier to manage that tin through the rise of things like DevOps as well, where those skills that happen in public cloud start to translate into on-prem infrastructure as well through a lot of that software. So it is starting to become a lot more like an elastic environment. It's just you own the tin that it's on. And you're starting to see developers interacting with hardware more, which is really interesting because it's coming full circle back to where it was 20 years ago, they're having to think about things they haven't thought about for a while, you know, memory management and processor management and all those kinds of fun things. But yeah, it is interesting, and we have stayed on-prem with our private cloud stack that we do sell onto our clients. And it's partially because our clients are those stable track kind of clients that I mentioned before. They're still quite afraid of public cloud, or they don't want that elasticity, that they don't need it. But some of them are just generally afraid of it. They're seeing these kinds of news reports and they don't know where their data is. They don't trust those companies to kind of do what they say they're going to do because there'll be some footprint in the terms and conditions that allows them to change it at any time. And it's weird. We still get some of our clients going, can we come and tour your data center? Like, okay, sure, no problem. Let's go. Let's do a tour. And they kind of rock up and they go, well, which one's mine? And you go, well, one of those disks has your data on it somewhere. But it gives them that confidence that they can see it, they can touch it, they can go, okay, I've gone in and seen it.
Yeah.
This is what it looks like. This is where the cloud lives. It's crazy.
It genuinely is in a secure facility. It's not somewhere up on the Google.
That's right. So yeah, look, we like it because we can control it. We can manage it.
Yep.
You lose that control as soon as you partner with some of the cloud, the public cloud providers. But as we were talking about before, I think the clients are just looking to run their business, whether it's an accounting firm or, you know, a manufacturing firm. You know, they're not worried about what the technology is underneath so much anymore. They want to know that it's going to perform, it's going to help them in their role, and you know, it's financially viable or within their budget.
And it's consistent.
One of the issues that you know, public clouds brings in that consumption model is that it's a consumption model, right? So the way we package our Vault solution is just fixed price. So it's consistent. They know what they're going to get every month, and it does its job. So it's an interesting space, and certainly it's getting harder and harder from a recruiting point of view and a talent point of view to bring in those skills. It'll be interesting to see where it goes in the future.
It's hard to predict the future. On that though, I can remember way back in the early mid thousands, the accounting industry in particular started to go through a bit of a shift of, you know, on-prem, off-prem. You know, the technology started to ramp up in what it was capable of, and Strategic Group really led the way into kind of cloud-based across that industry and across that financial services and particularly the accounting industry. You guys are pretty prolific, and are seen as somebody who does a pretty good job in Australia, especially. But having led the industry through that change, in a lot of ways, from a technology point of view, how to run your business on servers, or you know what to use and what things are capable of. What do you reckon the next big innovation is going to be around that space? Predictions, wild predictions
in the accounting space.
I reckon, yeah. It's coming up to 20 years. We've got to see another big change or something come. What do you reckon it will be?
I'm not really sure. I think, you know, it's hard to predict the future, as you say. I think the technologies that are out there that you know, are of interest to us, I should say. Things like we're seeing, you know, more and more IoT devices come in. How they're going to apply in that the professional services kind of industry. You know, there's less limited options right now, but I think that, you know, as IoT, you know, is kicking off, then that'll come in more and more. Certainly automation and integration services to automate work and make that easier is a big thing right now, particularly for accountants that are looking to automate some of that busy work, some of that compliance type work, I guess like applets in that kind of space to help with that need to integrate with everything. And I don't know, I mean, Zuckerberg's bringing the metaverse, right? So, how do we get involved in that, and where does that sit as a workspace?
It's going to be great sitting down with my accountant in the metaverse.
What tech's got you excited at the moment, Alec?
Oh, that's a good question.
Either available or not yet available.
I don't actually know. I've had my head quite in software-defined networking for the last 6 months doing a fairly large upgrade. So I haven't had a lot of time to explore that stuff. But I think even that's quite interesting, and I don't think it's been fully realized yet just exactly how that's going to change how a lot of our networks work, a lot of that security that comes together. Mm. I think that'll be interesting to see how that comes together. It's got me a little excited.
Nice.
It's nice to play with something new that's changing, and I think if you look at it in 10 years time, a lot of this stuff will become bread and butter in a way. So it'll be interesting. I'm going to call it now, but with the accounting space, I think the ATO, and I'm going to get it wrong, like I'm going to watch this in 5 years and I'm going to go, I was so wrong about this. I think there's a lot of fragmentation happening as well. We're starting to see a lot of these business suites that are not doing the job that they need from a one-stop shop. So it's becoming quite fragmented, where you've got your document management system over here, you've got your email system over here that's not linking with your document management system. So I think there's going to be a little bit of consolidation in that space, and we'll start to see the return of these kinds of one-stop shops. But I think this online model that a lot of the software's kind of playing with and trying to bring that convenience to end users is not fully working for them. I think it's starting to get there. But I think, and I hate to say it, someone's going to have some kind of big breach, because I think it's not if, it's when, unfortunately, nowadays. And I think that might send some shockwaves through that industry. That's probably going to bring things back to their roots, where they maybe even return to on-prem kind of client-server traditional models, because they're going to get quite afraid of just realizing just how much their data has become fragmented and a lot of those things. I hope I'm wrong. I'm going to put that out. I actually hope I'm wrong, because that's scary being a consumer of those products. But, you know, you said give me your wildest guess. That's my wildest guess.
No, it's always interesting to kind of have a thing, you know, where could things go? I think it's, as you say, it's hard to predict. There's plenty of crazy, exciting things going on. I mean, the things that have got me interested and a little bit excited are things like the Jasper AI platforms and things like that, and the ability to kind of feed it a little bit of information and then outspits this, you know, whole article, you know, based on, you know, millions and millions of pages being read on the internet and things like that. I think that AI space is really interesting, and I think, as you say, that those automation of basic tasks is, you know, we're able to build some machine learning into that and make that happen.
Well, there's the basic task, and then there's what you're talking about, which is really complex tasks, right?
It's complex.
And artworks and, you know, all the rest of it. All that, we're seeing now.
All that really interesting stuff. So I think there's it's hard to say what the commercial application of those things is going to be, but I'm pretty interested to see
for sure
what happens.
There's big power in that.
It blows my mind that those products aren't being used more for university these days. Maybe they are. I'm not up with what the undergrads are using to get their essays written. But if it was me, I'd be all over Jasper.
It's funny you mentioned that. I can't remember the name of it. There's an AI tool where you kind of feed it a bunch of words and it'll spit out an image for you based on those.
Yeah.
And our project manager absolutely loves it. So you'll have like a meeting with him and then after it, he'll throw some words into it and send you a funny photo. And there was one that he sent me with like a dog wearing a crown and scepter after the Queen passed and King Charles was getting ascended. It was just so funny to see that yeah. kind of power is coming into that space.
It's gonna be good. Yeah, the AI generated artwork's interesting. There's some getting around the internet of one of those AI artwork generators, and they've drawn up what the Simpsons characters would look like in real life. It's impressive.
I want to see that. It was scary.
It was pretty scary. Yeah, it's pretty scary. I was like, whoa, what's this? Is this a movie that's been made? No, it was all AI generated. So yeah, look that up. It's an interesting one. Yeah. That's cool. There's a lot of ways. Things could go. Obviously, where you ride the wave. Mm. You guys sound like you're pretty good at just evaluating technology on the fly. It keeps the industry interesting and then understanding how that applies for business. Yeah.
Well, I think, what I see our role is to really help businesses in the technology space. And regardless of what the technology is, and the technology is always changing. We've had some really good conversation around some of those examples here and today. But businesses are always going to need assistance, I think, with which one's right for them. Installing it, managing it, and making sure that it's working for the business, and that's what I see our role.
Yeah, sure. What tools and things do you guys love using from a business and productivity point of view? What stuff like gives you an edge?
Mm.
Have you got any apps or tools that you love using that you would recommend anybody out there in business or personally get around?
So my team that I look after in the infrastructure space, we like to really understand, and I think this is what sets us apart as well, is we don't just take an off-the-shelf product and go, well, it can only do these things. We take it and go, how can we use it? How can we apply it? How can we make it better? But because we've got an on-prem stack, we don't tend to lean towards a lot of cloud-based solutions. So we wanted something like a monday.com or a Trello, and we went and found an open source one called Vakunja. And my team have become incredibly ingrained in that. Yeah. And they absolutely love it because they can get those features effectively without having to have the data leave our data center, have it on in someone else's cloud. And it sounds so simple, but that task management stuff is a lot of where it comes down to how we manage our workflows and stuff like that. From a wider business perspective, but obviously being a ConnectWise partner's got a lot of benefits. There's a lot of integrations that happen that way, and it's fun seeing how that ecosystem's kind of evolving. I think that's kind of your side of the business.
Yeah, it's interesting, having a product like ConnectWise in our business and seeing the marketplace that they're trying to generate. Because it's not, businesses are typically they've got lots of different software products that they're using to run their business, and they don't always talk to each other. And so I think that space is really interesting about how, APIs and integrations are really connecting different apps together so that you can, push data from one app to another and get different reporting or whatever it might be. And, I think talking about ConnectWise specifically, but they're building this sort of larger marketplace where it's sort of a one-stop shop.
Yep.
It's a tool that we use every day. It really helps us, from everything from tickets to invoicing. So, it's a good one we use.
Yeah, I hope that was the one you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, nice. That's good. Well, guys, thanks for the time today. It's been good to hear how another local Nui tech business has sustained over many decades. And stays on the forefront, obviously is growing and continues to grow, leading industries and that kind of thing. So it's been great to have you. So guys, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Yeah, great.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Nui Tech People. To stay up to date with all our episodes, our show notes and past episodes, please visit www.nuitechpeople.com.au. Thank you.